Blog Talk Radio.
Lately. I'm Doria Wallace, joined as always by my lovely sister Raina Starr.
Who?
How you doing, Lips?
What? You know, fuck. Oh, shit, I didn't do the disclaimer first. I think I better do that.
Oh, yeah, you gotta do the disclaimer.
Well, I just do the shout-out, and then I'll do the disclaimer.
Okay, two things. Going to give my shout-out to my cousin Jessica up in New Jersey. I'm going to send you a knuckle sandwich and a bag of chips. I love you. And I am working from a new computer tonight, so I am really sorry about the chat room not being up, but I cannot figure it out, and my stupid ass didn't check it out beforehand. So go ahead and give your disclaimer now that I've already fucked it up too.
Excuse me. Now that she's explained that she can't get it up, I guess I'll do the disclaimer. Welcome to Desperate House Switches. If this is your first time listening, I must explain. This is not a G show, PG show. It's not even an R-rated show. You'll be lucky if we qualified for an X. So if you have anybody with delicate ears or their sensibilities, will be offended by really nasty speech. You have about a second and a half to get your happy ass out of the room. Up, done. Too late. You suck now. Okay. So, we took off last week because...
Yeah.
Well, we took off for a few reasons, one of which being I was fucking exhausted. And it was a holiday. It was a holiday, right? I can't remember. Whatever.
I think it was
anyway,
Labor Day weekend. I have no idea.
Labor Day, Memorial Day, Veterans Day. I can never keep these things straight. They're all interchangeable for me, even though I know, in fact, they are for different reasons. I hope the veterans forgive me. I love them 24/7. So to me, just a day is kind of silly. But okay. And all you laborers, I love y'all too every day. So, yeah, I have no fucking idea. I'm going to tell you, though, I had a really shitty week. I don't know what the hell is going on in the ethers, but I have been in a bad mood. I have been sad. I have been worried. I have been stressed out, and I don't have any fucking reason why. Nothing happened, but, you know, there's just something in the air that's making me go, oh, everything just bloody well sucks. I don't know if anybody remembers, was it the beginning of the year that everything was really shitty?
Yeah. Big time.
So it's kind of like that. So what's your take on this mess?
Well, we are in the shadow of Mercury retrograde, which heads up, people. We are going into it fairly soon.
Again?
It seems like we just get rid of one and another one rears its ugly fucking head. And, you know, I love my gods, but I've not had it with Mercury. Although, I don't know, I'm not getting the same feeling, but I'm not pushing it. I'm not going to push
just,
it.
You may just have pushed it. Who the fuck knows? The gods, you never know.
Exactly.
Okay, so apparently, I live under a rock because it was not widely reported that I know of that there was another shooting at a school in Seattle. What the fuck? It's like a weekly thing. It's, you know, we've become desensitized already. Boy, that didn't take long.
Oh, my God. You know, I just, I can't.
Okay, that's
can't.
Not. That's not an answer. But anyway.
I know. I cannot wrap my head around the fact that, you know, people think this is okay. I mean, they've got people down in Texas right now wandering through playgrounds, wandering through, you know, McDonald's or whatever other fast food restaurant, you know, the Walmart they hang out at. There was actually one. Even
they
in Target.
You didn't even say who they are.
I'm sorry. These people who are the gun-toting militia.
Oh,
you know, these
okay.
people, the right to open carry or something, it's like a bunch of petulant teenagers getting the power to do something. You know, it's like, okay, seniors. Oh, we're old enough to skip school, so we're going to do it. And we're going to put it in your face, and you can't stop us. Yeah, this is like the childish mentality. Actually, I think seniors are more mature. You know, because they're trying to push the envelope, trying to make sure that, you know, these people can't say anything. And I'm sorry, but as a mother, thanks to gods I don't live in Texas. Not just because it's for the most part, the parts that I've been through, I'm not talking for all of Texas. I've heard it's a very pretty country. But I did not enjoy it. And now I enjoy it even less. Because these yahoos are going around to playgrounds and restaurants with their rifles and semi-automatic weapons wrapped around their shoulders. And carrying them, and it's like, are you kidding me? What is wrong with you?
Hmm.
I'm sorry, that's my
well,
little rant.
I happen to love Texas. I, out of all of the places that I have been to in the last 3 years, Texas was my favorite. The people, for the most part, were the most friendly fucking people I have ever met. I think Texas gets a bad rap. For a few reasons. I understand why it gets a bad rap, but quite frankly, I love the hell out of Texas. I can't wait to go back to visit. I am actually making plans to do that. Aside from that, because I enjoyed the folks. The folks were really nice. Everybody I met in Texas, for the most part, they were the nicest people in the world. Friendly, wanted to get to know you, would keep you talking all night long, and it wasn't just one person. It was a bunch of people. Like, everybody I met wanted to stand and have a long conversation. And, you know, the people themselves, you know, everybody who does something crazy gets a lot of press because they're loud and they're crazy. There's loud and crazy and stupid where we are, too. So it's kind of like, you know, this is also a borderline red state. It was a red state for a really long time. Now it's kind of they call it a battleground state. I don't know. That's probably going to change in the next election, but it won't matter to me. But either way, I mean, you know, any place in the somewhere on the West Coast or Northern, you know, is probably going to have a bit of judgment about the brain power and capacity of Southern people. But I've been living in the South a really long time, and it's like, I like it. So, you know, I don't like the particular politics at work, but it's a nice place to live. So I kind of roll with it that way. But, but crazies in Texas are crazy, you know. I mean, and people are crazy. There are crazy people everywhere. You know,
yeah.
And that's the people making noise are the people who get pressed. That's it. You know, that's what people pay attention to. So if it seems like, oh, you know, well, they're all nuts. No, they're actually really not. It's just the people you're hearing about who are. But that's my little rant. But anyway, I don't know if anybody I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I'm just going based off of my experiences, which were, you know, not very good. I've seen it from the inside of Dallas Airport, and I've seen it from the inside of a Greyhound bus, occasionally on the outside of a Greyhound bus. Nothing against Greyhound, but they have a tendency to stop at the most god-awful places. I mean, their bus stations, I'm hoping they have updated them since 1995, but those are some scary fucking places. I just got to say, especially for my, you know, at that point, 21-year-old behind, by myself, coming from California to North Carolina, it was a scary experience for me. Not one that I want to repeat.
Well, yeah, I've done bus travel. I've done train travel. I much prefer train because you can actually stretch out and sleep on a train. It's a little different.
Yeah.
But you were going through a complete change of your life at 21. You had a lot of things to be worried about.
Exactly. You know, it's like, I don't know if I like this. This was not a good idea. This was not a good idea. You know, plus us short girls, we look like little kids. You know, so
yeah.
I was getting a lot of that. Like, oh, I actually had a woman stop me in Mobile, Alabama. I think, was it Mobile? Yeah, because we stopped at a bus stop there. And she was like, oh, honey, are you lost? Is your mama with you? And I was like, I looked at her.
Motherfucker, leave me alone, bitch. Who the hell are you?
I was just like, oh, that's so sweet, but no, I'm a lot older than I look. At that point, not that much older, but yeah. So I don't know why I'm rambling about that.
I don't know. I was the one who was supposed to be drinking tonight, and you're covering it for me without the alcohol. That's hilarious.
Oh, okay, awesome. Yeah, see, I'm entertaining when I'm sober. I'm not as funny when I'm drunk. I'm kind of funny because I usually can't stand up for very long. So it's amusing, but.
Okay.
And,
so in news of something completely unimportant, I don't know if everybody remembers when I used to review reality TV. I have something to review right about now. And tonight I am reviewing True Tory.
What? The hell
True
is that?
True Tory. I am about to explain for those who don't watch. Tory Spelling, who has had multiple shows, a couple of reality shows at this point, has recently done something called True Tory, which chronicled the affair of her husband, Dean McDermott. Yeah, that's the one. I keep confusing him with Dylan McDermott.
He's totally
different guys. I'm so sorry. I don't know why I do that, but they don't even really look alike, but I confuse them all the time. Anyway, so apparently her husband, Dean, went to Canada. He was filming Chopped. You know the show Chopped? On Food Network? Well, there's a show called Chopped on Food Network. It's a cooking show, and now they have one in Canada. And her husband apparently went to Canada and had a two-day affair with another woman. And this was all, and, you know, the fallout of her finding out has all been documented, mini-series, True Tory. So while I was in the city, I'm back at the country house now, but while I was in the city this week, apparently the show had wrapped, and there's this thing now that they do at the end of every reality show, and it's called the reunion special. I've never heard. This is the most fucking stupid thing I've ever seen. So they bring her and him back on camera, and, you know, they show clips of during the series of how she freaks out, and he freaks out, and she freaks out again, and he freaks out some more, and he's in some kind of treatment facility for sex addiction, and she's raising four kids by herself, and then she has him come home, and they try to work it out, and they have matching tattoos now, and she has
the wedding
vows. Oh, it's amazing. She has the wedding vows that he wrote to her, she has tattooed on her left side, and as a sign of wanting to start anew, as it were, he had her wedding vows tattooed on his left side. So I'm thinking, damn, if you ever want to fuck around again, it's going to take a lot of makeup to be covering that tattoo on your side, dude. I mean, that's kind of like, I don't think I'd be getting hot and bothered over seeing that on somebody. For real.
Oh, those vows are so sexy.
Oh, wow, your vows are turning me on. No, I don't see it. I don't get it. No. Not the vows. And the vows are big. It's all over the ribcage. I mean, it's on the left. They each have it on their left side, and it goes from the top of the ribcage to the bottom of the ribcage. So I guess if you get bored in the bathroom, just bring a mirror, and, you know, if you can read backwards, you're good. I can't even imagine having somebody's name on my body. I love my children. I wouldn't even put their names on my body. It's like, no, I don't need anyone's name. I don't need anybody's, you know, stamp of approval. I don't need anybody's branding on my person. I'm busy doing my own branding. Thank you so much. Really? I just don't see it.
I have the boys' names, you know. I have my sons, but yeah, I have always been adamant that I will never get a partner's name tattooed on me. Never.
No.
My kids.
No.
Those are forever, but you know, you never know. You know, you hope it won't, but you know, that's like, no, that's a death sentence right there.
I don't know if it's a death sentence so much as just an act of stupidity. Because, you know, the person you love right now might not be the person you love in 5 years. In some cases, it may not be the person you love in 5 weeks.
There you go.
In my case, in previous time, you were lucky if you got through 5 minutes. So, you know, love changes. I love you right now. I'll be with you right now, but I don't know what the future holds because you might find another bitch. I don't know.
You're funny.
You never know. You don't want my name on your body. And you know what? I would be so scared and freaked out if somebody put my name on their person. I would be like,
yeah.
You know how some people, there are some cultures that don't let you take their picture because they think it robs part of their soul? That's how I would feel about that. That's how I would feel. It would be like, oh, no, you really, no, I know that's very sweet, but please don't. Please don't.
Yeah. That's one thing. I feel bad for, like, you know, celebrities or sports figures or, you know, anybody in pop culture, so to speak, whether it be, you know, past, present, or whatever, you know, that's got to be freaky, like having people get your face tattooed on them.
Yeah, I would think no.
I don't know that that would be a compliment. I mean, you know, I love tattoos, obviously. I'm like, I've got ink and gathering, but it's like, I just, that would creep me right the fuck out. I'd be like, yeah, it was nice to meet you. Don't ever contact me again. You know? Oh, thank you.
I because I changed my mind so much as it is. Could you imagine? I would be like, the Encyclopedia Britannica would be on me if that were the case. If I was into ink, there'd be words like, you know, like I'd have like Faith, Hope, and something on one wrist, and I'd have, you know, and then I'd be like, oh, you know, let's add something. Because it's kind of like coloring your hair. For anybody who colors their hair, you know what we're talking about. Because once you start coloring your hair, it's really hard to stop. If you find yourself, I've these blonde highlights in my hair, and I'm thinking, maybe we should add more. And it's like you become kind of like a psychopath with these fucking little changes, and it's like, what will it look like if you put more blonde in? And my hairdresser looks at me like I'm insane. She's like, what do you don't know? Just the one, and I'm like, okay. But yeah, it's her fault. She started it. She's the one who said, oh, you need to have blonde highlights in your hair. And I'm like, okay. And then she did the first one, and I was not sure about it, and everybody loved it. As a matter of fact, enough people loved it that some people actually went and had it done the way I had it done. Yeah, I've had people say, hey, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to go do what you have. And I'm like, okay, go ahead. You know, and they even have gone to the same person to have it done. So I guess that's flattering. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I don't think, oh, you're copying me. And I don't think of it like that. I just think, oh, okay, it must look all right then because, you know, these different people want to copy it. So I've just left it. Because at one point I said to her, do you think we should cover it? And she's like, no, I love it. And I'm like, okay. So then she's like, this last time she actually made it more like a flame. It radiates the different colors of red to blonde. And I'm like, oh. And it took me like a week. Well, it took me a week to get used to it. I'm like, she's like, you don't like it. I'm like, no, I'll get used to it. And she's like, oh, you're so easy. I love that. And I'm like, yeah, it's hair. It grows, you know.
So there you go.
Now we're having the big cut my hair off debate. And I've decided not to cut my hair. So,
awesome.
Yeah, I've decided to actually see how long I can get it. So I actually may never have it short again. I like it long.
Yeah.
Aren't y'all thrilled knowing that shit? I'm just yapping like y'all are. You're all my best friends, and we're all just sitting around having a cup of coffee, having a conversation. Well, wait a minute. That is
Hell
the premise of the show. Oh, that's right. I forgot. And y'all get to join.
Yeah.
Must give a plug. Did I tell you that my period finally ended after 14 days? What a fucking nightmare. Oh, 14 days of flowing like a merry river. Oh, my goddess. I bled was a teenager. It was insane. And every time I thought it was letting up, within an hour, I was going through all kinds of feminine hygiene. You would not believe. It was crazy.
Oh, I am so sorry.
14 days straight.
Really?
Without any sight.
No, thank you.
It just stopped. I mean, it just 2 or 3 days ago, it finally gave up the ghost and quit. I'm like, is this what it's going to be like until it's over? Really? I mean, it was crazy. But anyway, on to other things. So, the plugs. So, our guest will plug himself, and we will plug him when he comes on. But in other things to plug, Dorothy Morrison product, The Wicked Witch has done it again. Wicked Witch Studios, check it out. We have spray oils that she has made, and they are yum delicious. And she's got this incredible new line of stuff for Facebook friends. So get in there and get on it. fantastic stuff. I can't wait to see what she comes up with next. I'm just saying.
So, I know, right?
I know. She's.
I think
I have
all of them now.
Yeah, and I, you know, at some point, and I told her I was going to do this, at some point I am actually going to put the collection of all of my Wicked Witch stuff together and see if I can fit it all in one picture. I don't know if that's going to be easy. I know, because I've got oils, I've got candles, I've got incense, I've got bags, I've got a tarot bag, I've got a purse, I've got a tote bag. I mean, it's like Mars in heaven over here. It's amazing. Love it, though. Don't care. Just don't care. I got poppet pins. I got all of it. Anyway, so, and then I have the hexology jars of hers. I have two. I almost forgot about all that. I have all kinds of
stuff. Yeah, I only have the one
thing. Yeah, I've got two or three. I can't remember. I have to go to the altar and look, whatever. You know, it's funny. I have a 5-tier altar, and I could probably use an 8-tier altar, but I don't know if they make them. So somebody may have to get very creative and come up with something. Oh, and I know we're running short on time, but guess what?
Chicken butt. What?
No. Guess what I'm doing tomorrow? I am buying for myself for the first time in over, like, 30 years. I am going out tomorrow, and I am buying a bicycle.
Did you find the one you wanted?
I found the one I wanted online, and I'm going to see if I can find one in town. I am in love with banana seat bikes, and I have wanted one since I was a little girl. And when I was a little girl, I was promised that if I got a good report card, I would get a bicycle. So my family took me to the bike shop, and I saw all these beautiful banana seat bikes. And my parents said, oh, but no, that's not fancy enough, and bought a bicycle that I hated and never rode because I fell off of it so many times, I almost broke my leg. And I was terrified of it because it was way too tall for me. And no matter how much they lowered it, it would never be short enough because I'm a shrimp. And tomorrow, my lifelong dream that started in childhood, buy a banana seat bike of my own, is going to come true. I am going to fulfill my dream.
Yay!
Yay!
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm excited.
Yeah, hopefully, you will find one that is way suitable, like your dream color, your dream, the height, everything.
Oh, speaking of height, did you check out the BMX to see if it was tall?
Oh, damn it, no, I forgot.
Okay, you have to measure it and tell me how tall it is, and then you have to tell me if it's way too short for you.
Okay, I don't think so. I think, if anything, it's actually tall for me.
Oh, really?
You know, because, he was only, let me see, the oldest, who now towers over me.
And everyone else.
I think he was like 10. No, he was about 12 when we got it for him. Yeah, it's probably a little bit too tall for me, but whatever.
Okay.
What,
just tell me how tall it is. Just let me know how tall it is.
Okay. I'll go out and measure it later.
Yeah. Yay, thank you.
Hey. You're welcome.
Yay.
So you ready for Mr. Jade?
I am.
All right, hold on a second. Let me get him on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
Are you guys both shrimps? Are you guys both shrimps? Is that what I'm hearing?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm 5'2", she's 5'1".
And a half.
We're pocket witches.
Oh, it's hysterical to hear Raina say that because, Gianna is 5'1 and a half, and she always has to throw that half in there like she's almost 5'2", like it's going to matter.
Well, I am almost 5'2". Wait a second. You know, be fair. I'll take every inch you can give me. Thank you. Ba-da-ba, boom.
Oh, that could be many things, and so let's just try to keep this show sane. It never ends, though, but that's all right.
With that. I was going to say, you've heard this show before, right?
That was me being facetious. This is the first time I've done this show in the daylight. I just feel like I'm like withering up in the sun right now.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
But it's good. It's good for me. But I do the show, and I get the nice breeze of the stars at night. I'm looking at out from my Austerian astrology office. A lot of people don't know I have an actual office for Austerian astrology. It's in the center of West Hollywood, and the reason why that matters is directly next to me is a Jehovah Witness Center.
That's awesome.
And that means every time I do these radio shows and I talk loudly like I am now, they have to hear it. It's funny how that happens, though, you know, because it is about tolerance. It's very common. Like, even right now on Beverly Boulevard, which is one of my favorite streets, they have this huge Christian temple. And then on one side of it is a pagan shop, and the other side of it is a building for transformation for gays and lesbians, and it's directly next door to it on each side. And you're like, well, this is kind of what, you know, judgment kind of attracts what you judge right into your sphere. And so and an Asterian astrology office opens, and I'm next to a Jehovah Witness Center. So it's all good on my side. I enjoy it, but I don't think they do.
There you go. Well, you know what? That serves them right for knocking on our doors. We don't like that either. Nah, they're actually very nice people. I used to work with a girl when I was working at a veterinary hospital. Like 3 hours from where I am now. But we worked on the kennel side, and she was a Jehovah's Witness, and she knew that I was a witch because I don't hide it. I'm like, you know what? I don't care. If you don't like me because of that, then I don't need you as my friend anyway. But so she was fascinated. She was like, so what do you do with this? And what do you do with that? You know, and I was fascinated as well and used to question her all the time. And we used to, you know, go out for lunch and everything. And, you know, she was a bit of an oddball, but, you know, I think that was just her. But, yeah, they're very nice.
You know, like, they're nice little creatures over there at the center. I'm joking, but it's funny because, you know, when I first came in here, every morning after walking in my office, I light my altar and I start doing my worship to Hecate. And they complained about me right away because I'm in an office inside of a place called the French Market, where upstairs there's therapists up here, there's skincare companies, there's a Jehovah's Witness Center, there's me. And I would light incense, and they complained about it. And then they complained about the chanting. And it was quite an experience, because here I am trying to ground myself, and I'm having all this chaos around me. But now everything's kind of settled, and we're friendly with one another. But, yeah, they'd have to hear me chant, you know, for a good 30 to 40 minutes before I started doing my sessions. And it is what it is.
There you go.
So you guys, what do you guys, I'm very curious because there's something slightly exciting going on. I can't really talk much about it. Raina, we've talked about Natalia Garcia. She does the Paula Mori show on Showtime. She, potentially the next major project she's going to be doing, potentially, there's a lot of heat around it right now, is about that statue of Baphomet in Oklahoma that's being erected there.
Oh,
really?
And if by chance that happens, I may be a part of the documentary, which is going to be nice because her and I are friends from way back. So it could be quite interesting, but I was kind of curious about what your take is or how much do you guys know about it or not.
Not.
Well, I know a minuscule amount. I know that there was a law passed that, religious prayer and statuary could be put up. So there was a Satanist group in the same county after they put, I think it was the Ten Commandments or something similar.
Uh-huh. Yep.
But what they did was, they were like, oh, okay, well, if you get to put this up, we get to put this up as well. And I believe they're working on a Muslim one as well.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I just heard about that too.
Yeah.
And, it's interesting, the people that are behind this, because I sent a complaint to them when they put it up. I found their website and sent them an email and say, why in the hell would you take the breasts off of Baphomet? It really bothered me. And
yeah.
I just got a response a few days ago of why, and it changed my whole perspective of it. They want it going global. They want the statue to spread worldwide. And with breasts, it would interfere with their mission to get it out to a much larger scale. Adopted the breasts, even though they said in our homes we worship Baphomet with breasts, but out there
right.
It would limit our ability to spread this out. And it changed my whole perspective of it. It's going to be interesting. I'm hoping, which they're hoping, it with something like this, is it has the potential to change the way people think a little bit. What is very interesting to know, which is kind of like an interesting conversation we can get into, is there are people out there that specifically work with satanic ritual abuse cases. Okay.
Really?
One of my clients, so this is interesting, one of my clients has been a client of mine since 1997. She is a therapist in Minnesota, and the subject matter that she works with is satanic ritual abuse. She has been a therapist for satanic ritual abuse for 27, now it's probably like 30-something years, and not one case has ever been verifiable. Meaning these are emotions that people store in them, see things they think they see. They think these things actually happen to them, but they're not verifiable at all. So she had come to the conclusion that her therapy is more about the person and what they're going through, not things that actually have happened to them. I mean, for someone to say out of like 27 years, not one case is verifiable. There's no goats being sacrificed. There's no babies being killed.
Yeah.
Now, what I found interesting is one of the people that belongs to this, and this whole thing about this temple being erected to Baphomet, they won't even put their names on it. Even the names they use are fake names because they know that their lives are in danger once this thing goes up, which is quite fascinating.
Yeah.
But one of them also, which we exchanged a minor some emails about this, had also dealt with the fact that they're trying to completely denounce ritual abuse because it doesn't exist. And that's what they were saying, that it doesn't happen. Like, you do hear stories of, a random goat sacrifice. You do hear some stories that are pretty eerie, but they fall under Santeria, not Satanists. Santeria will occasionally sacrifice an animal. And so when you hear stories, there was a cow with its head missing or a cat, more likely you're going to run into people who practice Santeria than, people who follow Anton LaVey or people who follow that type of philosophy. But it's interesting to note that they'd said, we were trying to first get this information, which then I became useful. I said, I know of a therapist you can contact. She's been doing it for 27 years, and she also agrees with you guys that not one is valid.
Wow.
She still treats them because her job is to help them emotionally, align, but yet it's not verifiable. She said not one. I thought at least it'd be five verifiable cases, at least, not one.
Wow.
And, there was a detective that I had worked with for a short period of time. There was a time as an astrologer I was trying to work for police departments, help them solve crimes. It was not successful. I'm still trying to do that. But one of them did tell me also that since 1973 they have had like 500 cases of satanic abuse reports, but have had over 22,000 cases of Christian sacrifice people sacrificing their kids because Christ told them to. It's really funny what we believe in our minds is safe. It's because really speaking, you know, a lot of people gravitate towards Christianity because they think it's safe. But if you were to look logistically at what is going on universally, it's not.
No, it's not. Yeah. I agree with you completely.
I mean, he said there was 22,000 cases since 1973 of a mother, father, just randomly killing their kids, cults that had sacrificed people. 22,000? I mean, that's significant. And they have, well, he goes, yeah, we had like 500 cases of like satanic abuse, because it did exist and has, but nothing in comparison to the other. But yet people still in their mind think it's safe.
Yeah.
No.
I don't
find it safe at all. Never did. Probably never will. But then again, I don't find a lot of things safe.
What do you find to be safe, Raina?
Well, here's the thing. I think people with obsessive compulsive personality disorder, and I think a lot of people have it, and some people just don't realize how bad off they are, the potential for abuse of anything is huge. And, you know, we're a very obsessive culture to begin with, just as American people. And then you add the religion factor on top of it. People will gravitate towards more is better, like being louder and more aggressive about trying to get your point across to the people who don't agree with you. Our culture has become ridiculously aggressive. And it just seems like one of the fastest growing vitriolic and more aggressive is the Christian, the sects of Christianity that feel empowered kind of scare me. I don't know what I find to be safe, because anytime you have people who are so vehement in their position that they don't, the fact that you have a differing position is enough for them to want to kill you, you already have no safety there at all. You will always look over your shoulder. And the thing that makes me laugh about it is the fact that the people who are the most aggressive are the ones who scream the loudest about them being in danger themselves. So I find it very interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah. You know, when you have a group of people saying they're trying to destroy Christianity, they're trying to destroy it, and then these are the people that wind up being like the jerk off in Texas with the holding the dead calf, saying the government is killing his animals because they won't let him have his cattle graze for free on you know, government land. It's like, these are the kind of people who feel like Christianity backs up whatever they want it to back up.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
There's a lot of billboards going up in L.A. right now. Yeah, there's a lot of Christian groups are buying billboards to talk about how Hollywood is promoting, you know, Satanism worldwide.
Well, they're supposed to kill Satanists, though, I thought that. But that's what I'm saying. The people that put up billboards like that, who say, you know, you have to destroy evil. Well, it's their concept of evil.
That's exactly it.
But it's just their concept. It doesn't mean anybody's evil. But these are the kind of people that, you know, one, you know, they hear voices, and then all of a sudden they fucking snap and a bunch of people get gunned down somewhere. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard a case or anything where any of our deities told somebody to kill somebody. It's always God, Jesus, or Muhammad. You know?
You don't hear a lot of stories about that. You know, India doesn't even have, you know, where paganism is the number one religion there. They don't even have those types of stories there. A lot of those, they're now having these incredibly strange experiences with these rapes. You know, I follow Indian news more than I follow news in America. And and you know, it's they're having a lot of this really crazy crap going on, but a lot of the central Hindus there are blaming Islamic influence for it, because Islam has the lowest belief of the female form out there, that is basically used for a man's pleasure and for her to have children. They won't they don't even want them to be educated. And so these places where these rapes are happening are some of them are Hindu, some of them are Muslim, but there are places that are infiltrated with Islamic consciousness. And I do believe that, because when I started going to India in the early to mid-90s, and, you know, Islam has grown so fast. It was, when I first started going, Islam was 20% of India, and now it's 40% in the span of, like, 20 years. It's just dominated, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, all these rapes and all these crazy ways of thinking. And it's not, I don't want to just blame a religion for these types of things, because humans are responsible for their own particular actions. But yet, nevertheless, the fact remains, this wasn't an issue before it started to spread. And we didn't see things like this. So it's kind of crazy what's going on right now.
You know, you want to know what I honestly blame?
I do.
Oil. If these little sects, you know, like sects of people, didn't have so much power, because we are willing to pay so much fucking money for fossil fuel, they wouldn't have a say-so. In my opinion, it wouldn't be a problem, at least not as much of a problem. Where you've got the Sultan of Brunei, you know, installing, or I don't know if that's the right word because I'm flustered, but, you know, instating Shira's Law. Or is it Shira's Law or Shahira's Law?
Sharia law.
But yeah, he's getting ready in the next year. He is going to be instating Shahira's Law. And it's like, if he wasn't being paid money, would he be doing that? You know, because Arabian countries, not all of them, but most of them have a tendency to be Muslim. You know, and it's like, this is why I get flustered, because I don't want to offend people, but, you know, facts are facts. You know, you can't deny that. And I'm sorry, but I think the root of it all is oil. And if we would look into more energy, you know, conservation and different ways of fueling our cars, not only would the environment be better off, but this shit wouldn't be happening. And
I think
sorry,
you do
I'm
like to offend people, though, by the way.
Yeah,
you said you didn't like to offend people. I think that on some level you do.
Well,
like we all,
I think
in a sense, when anybody just stands out and just is themselves, you just have to, you know, people are going to be offended. People are offended by everything.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But yeah,
I think truth
itself is in some cases offensive to people. It's like, look at this Zodiac thing. It's like, here is something verifiably true, and it's still offensive. You know, so we do have to offend people, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, sorry if you all are offended, but that's my opinion.
If I had to apologize for offending people, all I would do is walk around all day saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry.
You could just get some lipstick and write I'm sorry on your forehead.
There you go.
No,
it would save you some time a little bit.
Yeah, no, I don't care enough. Sorry.
No, seriously, this is who I strive to be, because I want to get to the point where I have always had a bad habit of saying I'm sorry, even for shit I didn't do.
Exactly.
Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm getting out of that, though.
Well,
I am.
You know, it's a big belief in India, which is the only place I ever heard it. You know, guilt is worse than what you did, always. I think, Raina, you and I have had some conversations about that at some point or the other. Yeah, we did. I remember.
Yes.
But, yeah, I do believe that. The carrying around guilt is more damaging than traditionally the action that was done to create the guilt to begin with. And so, you know, the spiritual path is about untangling knots that we create in our minds. And some people are able to do it, and some people are not able to do that. And if we can't untangle the knots that we create, then our life gets heavier and more challenging as we evolve when it's supposed to get lighter. You know, and spiritual mastery is about making errors and then untangling the knots that come from those errors. And it is a spiritual practice in itself, you know, which means when we do something that we feel responsible for that may have affected someone in a way we don't like, it is somewhat of our responsibility to acknowledge it and then release it and untangle the knots around it. And that's where I real freedom comes from. It's, you know, I've said before where my teacher said there's nothing you shouldn't be able to get past within 48 hours, and that was kind of the concept. You should be able to untangle any knots that create unhappiness within the span of 48 hours. And I believe on some level the acknowledgement of the other side of creation, the darker side of creation, and being aware of what it is and the treasures that it actually stores and holds has allowed me to kind of unravel things very, very quickly. If I only stayed in one side just concentrating on light, boy, you don't really then develop the tools that you need to unravel those knots. And that's why I think when people only focus on things that are light-based, it's like they're easy to blow over. Life just kind of smacks them around a little bit because we have to learn endurance spiritually. We have to learn inner strength, and this is one of the treasures of the darker side of creation. It does allow people to understand and practice strength and the ability to overcome things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it as an astrologer. I mean, all they do is work with people all day long, and the people that tend just to focus on light really struggle, I think. My personal opinion is they struggle the most because, you know, I hear all the time, oh, I'm not going to hang out with that person has such bad energy. I heard someone the other day, I don't go to Pan Pipes because the energy in there is so bad. It's like, you know what, you don't want to ever be in a position where life can roll over you like that. You have to be strong to endure anything, you know, and that's the goal.
True.
To be unaffected by what happens to life, you in life, because life is going to throw its blows at you. That's really what it does. And, you know, if someone is affected by everything, oh, that energy is so dark, I can't go in Pan Pipes because it's dark, it's like, then you're not going to have a good life because you're going to be constantly affected by everything around you. When the goal is somewhat to be unaffected by the things that take place, because shit's going to happen, you know. And you know, this whole concept of the secret. I'm so not into these new age philosophies that are out there, because I believe they just breed weakness everywhere. Because I hear this now on a day-to-day basis. Oh, you know, I went to this place, the energy was bad, so I left. Or I was sitting next to this person's energy was so bad that I had to get up and move. I hear these things on a day-to-day basis. It's like, you know, that isn't the path to peace. It's not the path to peace. The path to peace is being unaffected by things. I can hang out with someone that might have bad energy. I don't really care. I'm not really affected by that. It doesn't have to affect us. Now, in some cases, you have to be careful of what you do associate with. So, like, you know, the Native American belief, which I do subscribe to, is, well, you can see God in a bear. But you don't invite the bear into your tent. That's stupid.
True.
So there are certain beings out there that I'm not saying you want to pull into your tent because they're going to damage you. But you can still see God in them. You can still see the beauty of who they are and what they represent. You know, and I'm a big advocate for that. You know, we have to learn to see spiritual energy and everything. But, you know, like I do agree with the Native Americans, you can see a God in a grizzly bear, but you don't bring it into your tent. That's stupid.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, okay, shit's going to happen, bad people are going to pop up, but it's better to be aware of who you're dealing with than to run away from it.
Yeah.
You know,
eventually
you're going to run into somebody like that of dark spirit that you cannot get away from, and then you're going to have no bearings to deal with it. You're not going to know what to do with yourself. So, yeah, no, I'm completely on the same page as you.
strength, you know, spiritual strength. You know, I have people often ask me why hard things or bad things have to happen, and see, this is the belief in India that I personally do subscribe to, and even the people I work with on a spiritual level as an astrologer, I try to implement these ideas, you know, in order for someone, eventually we go through the path. There's a point where we start to unwind everything that we know, and that's called the spiritual path. The spiritual path is about unlearning, but it also is an unraveling of the intellect or the mind, so the deep experience of the mother can come through. India is the only place that talks about this. So when you hit what we call the first plane of consciousness, you start to, at that point, start having real experiences. It's out of the realm of the imagination. You start having direct experiences with the divine on whatever form comes to you. It's called, in my book, Hecate, Death, Transition, and Spiritual Mastery, I call it Saturnus Kylum, Kylum meaning the first inner heaven inside of you. And as we go through the Kylums, the heavens, or the chakras spiritually, and this is where we start having really profound inner experiences, if you're weak spiritually, and don't have endurance, it's very common for someone to pass away or die as they go through the transitions of the Kylums. It means when someone moves from the first chakra into the second, I'm talking about experiences, not feeling them. As a lot of, you can go learn about them and feel them. You can. I'm talking about when you open the heavens inside of yourself and you start to go through them. If you haven't been beat around a little bit and you haven't built up endurance, then you die when you go through transitions. And this is only talked about in India, when you go from the first plane to the second plane. Now, if you've built that endurance up, you know, and they compare that to a glass blower in India, like if, you know, if you blow a glass with fire too quickly, it just breaks. It doesn't really last very long. So you learn how to slowly burn a glass over time. So if it falls, it doesn't break. It's strong. So life does the same thing to people. If you're going to experience the path while you stay in your body, which most people don't, but if you do, it's because you've been slowly burned over time, you know, and you've just been through so much shit that you actually can endure whatever transitions your spiritual life is going to take you through. And so when people come to me and say, why is life so fucking hard? Why is this happening? Why is this shit happening? Well, it's because the universe is deciding who gets to experience the inner path while being conscious, as opposed to those who can only experience it after they die. And most of the people will experience all these incredible things after they pass on. That's why Christians emphasize heaven. You know, in India, these are called lokas. They're planes of consciousness that we go into after we die. But there is the type of person that wants to have those experiences while they're embodied and while they're alive and while they're consciously awake. They can absorb these incredibly powerful places while sustaining their body, and the only thing that allows that to take place is challenge. So if someone isn't equipped to handle challenge or negative energy or this, then they're just not really kind of cut out for the path. And unfortunately, a lot of modern spirituality is breeding these types of people that are not really solid, where we, as witches, so to speak, are supposed to endure. You know, that power of the crone is not a joke. If you can actually tap into the suffering and really spiritualize that, that was considered to be the easiest way to retain your spiritual status while going through the challenges of life. See, in India, the crone is associated with that. She is the force that teaches you to feel bliss even in the most challenging experiences. And by obtaining the crone state, you would then sustain your body through transition. So, so life is meant to throw us blows, and it's our job to kind of absorb those blows and become stronger from them, which that's what our path is supposed to breed. Not, I want to go hang out with that person because they're dark, and, oh, my God, I hear this shit all the time. Oh, no, he's just dark. He did this, he did that, and he's into black magic. I can't go associate with him. Again, I don't believe we should invite bears into our tents, but we have to learn to see God in everything. There are people out there I don't want to hang out with, and it's not because their energy is bad. Sometimes they just bring more, challenge than necessary, but we do have to be able to embrace those experiences if they do happen, as Dorian just said. Sometimes we have to deal with people that are challenging. That's what family is for. Sometimes we have family members that just suck, and we have to endure their shit. So it's true. Some people, we can't get away from it. So it's about being strong when it does happen.
Exactly. Yeah, I love that analogy. I really do, because it makes so much sense. You know, it's like, instead of questioning why, it's like, because believe me, I still do every once in a while. It's like, really? Again? Why? But the less I question why, the less actually happens. You know, it's like if I kind of let it roll off my back, or at least attempt to, even if it's, you know, rolling with a ninja star or whatever, cutting into me, you know, it's like, okay.
Do people throw ninja stars at you?
On occasion, but, you know, I'm short, I duck. I'm cool like that.
Yeah, I remember I had a ninja star when I was, I think, 13.
Awesome.
Prescott, Arizona, I bought it at a martial arts store, and I remember just throwing that thing all over the place. I forgot they existed until you just said it. I'm like, wow, maybe I need to get one again. And maybe just throw it at you, see if you can defend yourself from it.
Oh, boy.
I've got swords. See, this is what happened. My mother denied me the pleasure of having a ninja star because they used to sell them at the flea market with, like, a little tassel on them or something. And, oh, my God, I wanted one so bad. You know, that no, ladies don't have weapons. So what did I proceed to do? As soon as I got out of
collect
her house,
them.
I proceeded to collect knives and swords. All kinds of sharp, pointy things. I love them.
You like sharp, pointy things? Why?
I don't know. I just do. It's, you know, I don't know. It's thrilling to me. I like the coldness of the steel. And that it's like, you know, it's such a weapon, but I would probably never use it unless I had to. My favorite one I got when
go
I was
ahead,
working
James,
at a gas station.
You opened this fucking can of worms.
I did. I'm
you,
loving it. I love
you
it.
Go, James. Go.
they're fun to play with the other way too. But yeah, my favorite one is a double edge. It's like a flip blade, not switch, but flip blade. On both sides, and one blade goes one way, one goes the other. And I was working at a gas station, I think it was like my second job, because I had two or three jobs at one point when I was a single mom, you know, and I worked in, this was crack town. I mean, there was crackheads coming in every day, and I'm like this tiny little white girl behind the counter, and, you know, it was like, they thought they could come in and start pushing me around, and I'm like, uh-uh, I don't think so. You know, and if the surprise aspect of it didn't work, I had my knife on me. My manager let me carry it.
Well, this kind of evokes this very, you know, very powerful experience. I had one of, you know, we're in June now. We're halfway through this year, and one of the most...
I know, right?
Exciting events of this year, and it might be one of the exciting events in my life, because I'm a big horror movie fan, but specifically B-horror movie. It's got to be dumb. It's got to be kind of goofy, and the director has to miss his mark. I love bad movies. I love really bad B-movies. I'll go at midnight to watch these ridiculous B-horror movies at the Silent Theater and just go, how in the hell did the director even consider coming up with this and making this movie? But anyways, I went to the, you know, the Chinese Man, which, you know, your Chinese Dragon came up in my mind, by the way, Dorian.
Mm-hmm. Yay,
but
thank
the
you.
Actress, and I put this on my Facebook page, but I am still, like, overwhelmed. Tina, who dies in Nightmare on Elm Street, her name is Amanda Weiss, or Weiss, I don't know exactly how to pronounce it. She had never in her life watched the scene of her death.
Really?
Ever. I didn't know. I mean, I had no idea. She saw the beginning of it, and it horrified her when she was a child. And so she wouldn't see it. So I go, buy my ticket. I knew there that some people were going to be talking there. I had no idea I was going to be sitting right next to her. After she was done with her talk, she gets up and she comes, sits right next to me. I get to look over and say, Amanda, Tina, you know, big fan of horror. The movie was amazing. It was the Chinese star that brought this up, because when I was a kid, I made nunchucks to prevent myself from being killed by Freddy Krueger, because the movie scared the fuck out of me when I was a kid. It got in your dreams. It's like, oh, my God, you have to go to sleep and you have to dream. Oh, my God, you're going to die. So I was terrified of Freddy Krueger. And I watched the movie by myself, 10 years old, by myself, and it scared me so bad I couldn't even get up and turn the TV off. I wouldn't even move. I was just like, oh. And now here I am, a movie that changed my life. I loved horror after that. I watched that movie 20 times just trying to rationalize what had happened. But I get to watch her death scene with her for the first time ever.
Wow.
And she's sitting next to me, and I get to talk to her as the scene is going on. A classic moment in my life, being a big fan of horror and sitting through movies hoping I get scared, and I never do, but I really hope that I do. But I get to watch it with her, and I get to tell her, I said, you know, Amanda, I said, the death scene is scary, but your body bag scene is scarier. That was the scene I told her I couldn't even get out of my chair when I was a kid. So amazing for me. You know, and I deal with celebrities all day long. I deal with people this, people that. I don't really care. I was starstruck sitting next to Tina, Amanda. I was like, I love this girl. This girl, you know, is an icon to me. And I get to sit there and talk to her and watch the death scene with her for the first time. I was like, dude, classic. So that in your Chinese star brought it up. I thought about when I had nunchucks when I was a kid in order to prevent myself from being killed by Freddy Krueger.
That's
wow.
Awesome. You know,
how did she,
you know,
feel
who I met?
Her scene?
Well,
oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask Jay, how did she do watching her scene? How was she?
She said the funniest thing to me. She said, it doesn't even look real. She goes,
wow,
I was scared of this. See, we have high-def screens now. I mean, the movie was on film. I mean, it was at the Chinese Man, a huge screen. I mean, it was redone, so the blood looked pink. When you watch the movie,
wow.
It doesn't. It
yeah.
looks real. But now that things are in high-def, you can watch these old, you know, 80s movies, you know, and you just see them totally differently now. And she's like, it doesn't even look real. And I said, well, you know, to be honest, the first scene I thought was scary, but I said, that body bag scene was what really got me when I was a kid. And I got to see, I got to talk to her. I'm like, oh, my God. My roster of celebrity clients is pretty big, and I acknowledge that, and I'm happy about that. I'm not starstruck at all. As a matter of fact, especially if you live in the city, like there were times where one of my friends who's very well known, I had sat with her and gave her a reading, talked to her, then had dinner with her after, and then she went and shot an episode that was live, and I got to see her walk right on to the set and do something live. And another one of my clients I talked to, and I watched her go on the Chelsea Handler show right after. You just realize they're working. They're people working like everybody else. The
exactly.
thing with Tina
yeah.
to me was totally different. It was like that movie set in my consciousness, and still does, as one of my favorite movies ever. And to say I actually watched the scene with her for the very first time, to me it was like, wow, that's going to go down even on your deathbed. You got to sit with Tina and watch the death scene with her. I was like, wow, that's cool. And I didn't arrange it. I didn't plan to sit where I did. I just happened to sit where her seat was reserved, and she sat right next to me. I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, that movie changed my life. That was the first movie that scared the crap out of me. I've never was scared by movies before that. I couldn't find that one that got in. That one got in. and so it was
that
set my
awesome.
Conscience. It was a very high experience. And even my friends around here that I know, they're like, yeah, Jade, you know, you don't belong to any Wiccan organization. You don't belong to this group. You don't belong to that group. But you do belong to the horror group here in town, which I do. The
That's
only group
awesome.
I belong to
wow.
is a bunch of us horror geeks get up at midnight and go watch these terrible movies, and that's the only group I belong to is that one. And
that's awesome.
I do, you know, and it was India that spiritualized my connection to horror. And I'm not saying everybody has to like horror. That's not what I mean at all. But the agora is about constantly confronting what it is that you fear. Now, when I was a kid, this started early. I would watch horror movies by myself. My mom would even try to prevent me from watching them. I'd wait for her to leave so I could watch them. And I would get scared. I would feel the fear come up. I didn't know what I was doing when I was a kid, but when I was in India, I'm like, oh, my God, that's why I kept putting myself in those situations to be afraid. Now I hear them in India, and it is about looking or addressing what it is you're afraid of. And I'm like, oh, this makes sense. I see the correlation right away. And then to find out, call Babaji, one of my gurus. His children were big horror movie fans, so when I got there, I would go do spiritual practice with call Babaji, and then the next day I'd go watch a horror movie in India with his kids. And I'm like, ah, it all kind of comes together a little bit because, you know, I did have some night terrors when I was a kid. I did. And now I've identified all of that as Hecate being around me from the time I was a child. And I felt her energy very powerful. And I had very specific spiritual experiences when I was a child that were very active that my guru in India called Babaji, he first asked me, he said, do you remember your very first experience? I said, it was when I was a child. I said, I would even say between birth and four. I had very significant ones and ones that actually did scare me a little bit too. And he would say, that's where you need to go back. He said, you know, as the mind develops, it throws out those experiences. It doesn't, the mind, the intellect doesn't allow people to really experience anything anymore. So you have to break through the mind and go back to where you were when you were a child, which we've addressed before, is what you're supposed to do when you get older. To break that boundary between the mind and spiritual experience, because when we're younger, we are more susceptible to experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mind kicks in, and once the intellect kicks in, it controls the realm of what we think we feel and what we don't. Where India, its practices are about breaking that intellect back down so you can go back into experience again. So horror has always been around me. It's always been something that I've been fascinated by. I love being a part of the horror community here. Even like the music that I do, even though that drum and bass doesn't really have like a horror connection to it, I add that element into it. I love that part of it. And, you know, I'm going for playing shows that are live here, and my goal is to have very specific movies playing behind me. And not even ones that people know, but ones that people don't know. Like, there's some Japanese horror movies that are just unbelievable. I don't know how they come up with the movies they do, but they make the most horrific movies I've ever seen.
Oh, The Audition? Oh, God.
I love The Audition.
Even thinking about it. Oh.
That movie was awesome. Audition was awesome.
I loved it.
Bag scene when they realize that person's in the bag.
Yes.
I was like, crazy.
He jumps. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I know I'm like a little kid when it comes to, like, gross movies, but, Japanese horror movies are, like, among my favorites.
Yeah, they really got it together with it, you know. And now I keep going to these movies hoping I get that feeling of fear I used to have when I was a kid, but I just don't get it anymore. You know, it takes a lot to really get in there and create that feeling of, like, I don't want to see this. And I don't like blood movies. Like, you know, like Saw, I like the first one. I like a couple of the other ones. But most of all, I'm like, you know, watching people get cut up, it's like, that doesn't scare me. It's kind of gross. It doesn't scare me. Those psychological movies that really get in and do damage, very seldomly do I feel that. Although I'm reading a book about the interview of Ted Bundy, the serial killer. I'm reading all the interviews where he was talking about what he went through when he killed each person. And, man, there were moments reading that book, which I'm finishing it up right now. I'm like, wow, that's just completely horrifying. And what makes it so horrifying is how smart the man was. He was literally like an intellectual genius. And yet he puts you in a position of going, you know, when you're in a situation where you just kind of veer off the path just for one second and you do something just completely contrary to you, and that becomes your identity, your reality is that mistake, and then you keep repeating it. He was like, that's all I did. He goes, I just accidentally killed someone one day, and now I can't get out of it, and these are the emotions I go through right before I kill someone, and you're reading it, and you're going, wow, this is heavy. this is intense because he makes it seem like what he's doing anyone can do at any moment and any time, which makes the book scary. It's like, hey, are you ready to explore that part of yourself? That's basically what he's saying. It's like, are you ready to explore this side of yourself that is, you know, this negative or this bad? But what's scary about it is the fine line that he throws between just reality and then doing one thing that is completely contrary to what you would think is normal for yourself. That book I'm reading right now is the first time in a long time I felt something where I went, ooh, that's a little bit scary. That's a little bit scary. And it's not the fact of what he's doing. It's the fact he's making it seem how easy it is to turn out like him.
Not that it is,
by the way. I don't think people can kill people unless they have these spiritual I don't like to use the word spiritual with that, but they have to have the karma for that. You have to be someone, in India they talk about this, and you don't hear anywhere else where it's like, one life, if you are murdered, right after you pass on, you experience this sense of helplessness that is so deep that it often will put you, your next life, wanting to be completely strong and empowered in the most grotesque way, which then makes the person a killer. So the victim often turns into the killer, and they switch back and forth. The person that's killed ends up feeling so horrific about what they've done after they die that their next life they feel the need to take the form of a victim and be murdered. And they explain that in India, and this is Kali consciousness, by the way. This isn't the Kali Tantra, where she ruled over the lake of murderers. Oddly enough, so does Hecate. Lake Arjuna in Italy, Hecate rules over it. It was called the lake of murderers. But what it is, it's a pull. It's an energy that was extremely difficult to get out of because once you were murdered, you often felt the need to respond that way your next life and be the murderer to protect yourself. And then the murderer took the form of the victim, and in India they say it can be a cycle that takes lifetimes and even may require a guru to intervene to change it because a person goes right back and forth. They can go kill each other lifetime after lifetime, go back and forth. And it's like Ted Bundy's book kind of shed light on that stuff about that way of thinking. And I was like, oh, gosh, crazy, crazy stuff out there. The mind is a pretty amazing thing, but at the same time in India it's considered to be the ultimate detriment to your spiritual path. Not that we're supposed to be ignorant, but there's your intellectual mind, and then there's your consciousness which sits above it. And the reason for they are saying to annihilate the intellect or to stop the mind was so consciousness could fully take over and you could act from a place of consciousness, not intellect.
Wow.
Which is wisdom. Really, consciousness is wisdom. You know, cause it would be awesome if everyone could have a Harvard education and those people turn out to be good people. It doesn't work that way. You know, people can be highly intelligent and be the biggest morons you've ever seen in your life. It's about stepping into consciousness. Wisdom is different. That is obtained through reincarnation and through awareness. And you don't have to have a degree to have consciousness or wisdom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like the difference between book smart and street smart. You know, sometimes people are both, but most time it's one or the other.
It is true. You know, people are either one or the other, and it's funny how we are in this age where, you know, America is definitely spinning downward with its education. And I do think education, by the way, is very important. I mean, I had chose astrology as my education, and it was a goal of mine to be as educated in that subject as humanly possible. So I am an advocate for education, but I'm not an advocate for the idea that education makes you a good person.
Right.
Oh, yeah. No,
it doesn't. That's something more inherent, and that's even where astrology and things like that come into play. Because what is, again, the most terrifying force of awareness out there, which comes right from the Kali Tantra again, is you don't get God realized or you don't end this thing by being good. You balance it all out. And this is why Buddha said, take the middle path. Because if you renounce the world and you become a nun, that might swing you right back into prostitution, the light right after, to balance out what you missed. And so it's better just to stay in the middle while remaining consciousness and have an outlet for a little bit of good and have an outlet for a little bit of bad. Even, you know, in India, that's called Tantra. It's like, it's better to be aware of both and to utilize a little bit. And that's why most practitioners of Tantra in India will either take a little hit of pot right before they do a meditation or drink a little bit of wine, one or the other, because it was good to invite a little bit of sin into the altar place so you could find some balance and some yin and yang with your object of devotion.
Huh.
Interesting.
That's good to know.
You balance it all out. That's all you do. And what happens is, if when you swing back and forth from identity to identity, there what happens is it's like a rubber band. It starts, if you keep pulling on it through tension, it just starts to get loose, and then ultimately it breaks.
Yeah.
And so by going back and forth between different identities, the mind starts to become loose, and then it starts to break, and then the real path starts to come through. And that's how my guru in India would always explain it. He was like, no, the reason why you go from one identity to the other, and often your opposite form, like whatever it is you judge the harshest, is often what you end up having to take the form of in your next life, which he made fun of me because he said, you were in northern India your last life, and you were an Indian man, and guess what? You hated Westerners. I'm in the West right now. Same consciousness, but I am in a Western body now, which is really interesting, though, is I am in this body, and I can often still say the same things that I said in that life. I get along so much better with cultured people. You know, like when I go to India, I have good friends there. That's where my good friends are. I come here, and I kind of struggle with Westerners still. It's like, still have it. But whatever it is a person is judging the harshest in their realm, whatever you have hatred towards is generally the route you're going to end up taking, because it breaks you out of your identity to go into that route. It makes things looser. It loosens up that rubber band, as we call it, the mind, the intellect. And the only way we have spiritual experience take over is to have the mind be loose. It has to be loose. It can't be really rigid and dense. Otherwise, it prevents experiences from coming through. That's why when we're young, the mind is loose. So we're more open to experience. And as we get older, it's supposed to get loose too. And that's supposed to open us more to spiritual experience.
You know, I've been noticing lately, like, a need to, I don't know, I mean, I'm 40, and I'm hoping it's not maybe just a midlife crisis, but I've been drawn back towards that magical aspect from when I was a kid. Like, I want that feeling back, not necessarily the experiences of being a child or just being young, but like I remember my father, because my mother was against it. She was like, she didn't like the fact that I liked monsters or scary stuff from the time I was really little. I wasn't scared of anything, you know, aside from piranha. That scared the shit out of me. But I was five. I was like, okay, I really have to go to the bathroom, but I can't touch the floor because piranhas are going to bite my feet, you know? Just silly stuff like that. But I got a book, I think it was a Valentine's Day present, and it was, I have a copy of it now because my original one got stolen and the kid cut out pictures. I was mad. But I found another copy, and it is all about magical people, like mermaids. It's called Fantastic People by Scott. I would have to look for it. But it's all about dwarves and all kinds of stuff. And I remember the feeling that gave me, like, oh, this is, you know, these things are possible, these exist, or, you know, oh, that's so magical, or the feeling it gave me. I've been trying to get back to that. You know, I mean, is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, 100%, yes. I mean, as a matter of fact, it's just kind of, you know, I'm having a very interesting experience as I'm getting older, is my memory of my youth is getting sharper. Like,
yeah.
There are things that I just have not thought about for 20 years. All of a sudden, I'm thinking about them a lot. And there are those experiences around youth. I can feel I'm moving more into energies that were connected to my youth. And I remember the feelings I had in my youth. And even I had night terrors when I was a kid. And I know why now. I know Hecate was right there in the mix. And when she was around me, she would play this very specific role that was intense. But now I love those feelings I had. You know, I for a lot of people that are pagans, witches, whatever, that book, Where the Wild Things Are, really kind of set the tone. And the reason for that is because the imagery that they use, I think, is very close to the afterlife for a witch. You know, we, like you know, as they say in India, heavens and hells both exist. They're just not permanent, and they're states of consciousness that you create while you're alive. And so he would tell me, he would actually tell me I'd go to Kali Loka after I died, which means I'd go merge into Kali and play in her world, which would Kali Loka just means the heaven of Kali. And he goes, and I know for a fact it's where he came from my last life, because coming from Kali, Hecate, Kali, same thing to me, coming into my body, I was still, as a child, remembering where I had just come from with Hecate. I was in her world and playing with friendly monsters and friendly witches. And, you know, when I see Halloween things, they don't scare me. They remind me of things that I really enjoy, as most witches at
church. Yeah.
Because that is the realm, that's the realm we had come from before we'd taken birth, and we belong to that realm. You can't choose to be part of that realm. You're either part of it or not. And so that book, Where the Wild Things Were, it brought the memory up as a young kid of where I'd come from, that dealing with friendly beasts and friendly monsters and things that were mystical in nature. And we are part of that world. So, yeah, that movie, I still have the book. I have posters of that, because it was important, as you were saying, for me to feel some of those youthful energies again. And it's that book for me specifically, I'm not saying for everybody, that really reminds me of the really strong pagan Wiccan feelings I had when I was a kid.
That's awesome. You know, I
do you
had
guys
never
have a book that stands
it.
Out for you guys like that?
It's definitely Fantastic People. And it's mostly just pictures, but the artwork, because, you know, not that I'm a great artist, but I can draw. You know, so art has always been a draw for me. You know, so the artwork and the fact that it's mystical creatures and, you know, there is a little bit of blood and gore at some points, but most of it is fantastic. You know, what about you, Raina?
I have nothing like that at all. I cannot give you any specific book that I found to be that much of a driving factor. But I've always read books. I've always been into biographies. And the first biography I think that really hit me. Do you guys remember? I don't think you guys are old enough to remember. Well, you might remember. There was a book about Joy Adamson, who wrote about her time in Africa with her husband, George Adamson, who was a game warden. And they befriended. Well, what happened was in Nairobi, they had a lot of lion attacks. And what they had to shoot one of the lionesses, and they took care of her cubs, and the cubs remained with them on and off for most of their lives.
I remember them.
Yeah, and there was a movie about it. It was called Born Free. It was a book. It was a movie, and I loved the connection between animals and people. In that regard. And that is something that always resonated with me.
That's awesome.
But from a purely magical standpoint, I wasn't into horror. Witchcraft was a very nonchalant thing in my world. I wasn't even really aware of it until later, you know, like 11, 12. There were things that I thought happened in every family that happened in my family, and to me it was just normal, so I never thought of it as anything interesting or out there. You know, like I had my grandmother would call me and tell me things that nobody else knew but me.
Ha!
But I never really thought about it as, oh, you know, she's an empath, or oh, she's this, or oh, she's that. She's grandma, you know? That's just grandma stuff. I thought all grandmas do grandma stuff. I don't know. You know, because like we always tell our children, if you have kids, you tell your kids all the time when they're little, I know what you're doing even if I'm not in the room. I have eyes in the back of my head. Stuff like, I mean, that's the kind of stuff we say as mothers. And it's just, you know, I didn't realize that there actually were mothers that could do that shit until I became one. You know, so I really didn't have one thing that pushed me in that realm like that. But the connection between this lion and this woman was very fascinating.
Well, that's amazing, though. That to me is powerful. Remembering things like that, I did have my one obsession, which was Skeletor.
Yeah.
Master of the Universe. I was obsessed with Evelyn and Skeletor and Castle Grayskull. And, you know, I had someone recently contact me from high school and see all the witchcraft stuff I'm doing. As a matter of fact, it's going on right now as we're talking. He's like, boy, I do remember when you were obsessed with Skeletor and Evelyn, and now it's like you still are. And I
wow.
took that as a total compliment, by the way. I thought it was hysterical. There are things that I can literally say that I was drawn to all the way up until now, then there's been a very specific vibration in all of it that is just me and my relationship to Hecate. I mean, I can feel her almost in almost every choice that I've made up until even now. Just now about being consciously aware of that force as opposed to leaving it in the subconscious. It's like, why have I been drawn to things? Like, the thing with horror is just very specific to me, and I don't ever believe that someone should go get into horror. I just liked it when I was young. It was already there. You know, there's certain types of books I liked, and my fascination with stars, you know, like literally going out at night in Arizona and just looking at stars. And I remember laying down on a beach in Lake Havasu, Arizona, looking up at the stars, and feeling how, like, my first out-of-body experience was, like, merging into space. And, like, even to this day, I love space. Space is one of my favorite feelings. The dark night where all I see is stars. Well, this strange drum and bass music I create, there is an ethereal electronic, but I feel is a spacey feel to it. And I still feel totally linked into space by being an astrologer. And space by doing electronica music, I like space. I love space. And as much as I love horror, I even like sci-fi even a little bit more. Eerie sci-fi, weird sci-fi. I've always been attracted to things that are very spacey and eerie. You know, like when I was a kid, you know, driving on a lonely road and you would see like the cross on the side of the road. Well, I found out when I got older, like in my later teenage years, I would often drive down those roads. Even though I would still go, ooh, this is so eerie and creepy, I would still keep putting myself in positions to look at whatever my fears were. And now I just ended up liking the things that I used to find to be eerie or creepy when I was younger. I just happen to love those things now.
Yeah.
Not that I like people dying. That's not the point. I don't like people dying. That's not what I'm saying. It's just a feeling that comes off those eerie moments of like looking in space and going, oh, my God, what the hell is out there?
Yeah, that little
those
symbol.
Lonely roads at night. And now I attribute all that to Hecate in the form that I experience with her. That's not the form everybody else is experiencing, but it's the form I do.
That's cool.
But it's a combination. Isn't it a combination of, you know, wondering what was out there and a childhood memory that was good, and that just kind of brings it all together?
Well, you know, it's a very interesting statement because – arguably, I didn't have a good one, and it's funny because other people in my family aren't having those experiences that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I, for some reason, as a child, was able to like myself. I can't explain it. I really did enjoy time by myself, alone. I would, when I first learned how to drive when I was 15, I'd drive out in the middle of the desert and stay the night looking at the stars, and I loved it. I enjoyed it. I did not have, if it wasn't for me enjoying my own space, and if I was really reliant on my environment, I'd probably be a disaster right now.
Mm-hmm.
It was my ability to really like myself. Like I mean, I went through high school, and I was the type. I was very popular in high school. I'd been voted most popular before, and things like that. Meanwhile, what was going on in my world around me?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of remarkable that I was still able to be a jock and like win football games as a running back and have really good memories in high school and junior high and elementary school, considering what the hell I went through at the same time.
And I understand that because I had a particularly not good childhood. There was a lot of psychoses and abuse and mental illness of family. But when you find those moments in the worst of things where you have that peace with yourself, that's what I mean when I say a good memory from childhood. It doesn't necessarily reflect on your environment. It reflects on how you were able to find or have joy in spite of the environment.
Yep. Oh, I do agree. Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah,
yeah.
I totally get what you're saying because, yeah, I similarly did not have a great childhood that I could reach back for. Many things to say, oh, what a great memory when, you know, my folks and I did this or that. It's funny because, and Sis and I were talking about it earlier, before you came on the air, I said, you know, guess what I'm doing tomorrow? I'm buying a bike. And it actually comes from a very painful memory from childhood. So I am actually fulfilling a childhood wish tomorrow by buying this bike. So I'm very excited about it, and I think I appreciate it more now than I would have at another point in my life. Even at my old age. Ah.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting that you bring up bikes, because I think that the most liberating feeling when you have a kid is the first time you ride a bike.
Mm-hmm.
There's something
mm-hmm.
phenomenal about that experience when you take those training wheels off a bike and you go. It's like the first real taste of freedom people have. Gian and I talked about this the other night. We live in L.A., and this is not a good place to have bikes, but we both would like
no.
to be in a place where we could ride bikes, you know, because of that feeling of freedom and that you have. I'll never forget the year that I took the training wheels off the bike and went, and, you know, you just want to stay out all day just riding your bike. It's a really freeing feeling.
It is, and it's that feeling of independence that you can get somewhere. You can get relatively far on a bicycle, yeah, and it's like your first car. It's a car for kids, you know what I mean? So I remember being out on a bicycle literally all day long and spending, you know, like time away from everybody. Again, when you like your own company, it makes it a lot more fun to just go and do it on your own. So it all relates. I'm very excited about picking out my bicycle.
So how are you guys recognizing, you know, we're getting ready for two huge momentous shifts in the world of real astrology. Jupiter goes into Cancer June 18th. And then Saturn goes into Scorpio November 1st, which means the two major outer planets are going into water signs, which is going to be really freaking heavy. And I'm experiencing some people are already feeling it. Like, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Are you recognizing a lot of people are starting to struggle and suffer a little bit more right now?
I am.
Yeah,
I
had it last week. I mean, just emotionally, not anything really going on, but I was definitely feeling something. And this is happening on top of Mercury retrograde. Seriously? Cheesy, crazy.
But the night before, I saw two people get hit by cars on my walk. And someone was walking across the street and just got tagged by a car. And
oh, no.
So I'm there, person's bleeding, unconscious, the ambulance shows up, he becomes conscious, they say he's probably going to live. I'm like, wow, that was quite an event. And I go on my walk, and then midway through my walk, someone else gets hit by a car. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I just watched two people get hit by a car. But there was an energy out that night. There was an energy I cannot, and it's still kind of around. And it's the shifting of a lot of major things. And I think some people might have some of the biggest changes they've had in a long, long time this summer. And this is, I'm telling people, you don't have to believe in real astrology or not. You're going to feel it, man. When Jupiter goes into Cancer on June 18th, you're going to feel it. And more than anything, you will feel Saturn go into Scorpio November 1st. Western astrology already has it way in Scorpio, and you can visibly see with your own eyes it's just getting ready to go into Scorpio. You can see it. And November 1st is when that happens, and that's going to shift things up, and that's going to be really intense for people, Saturn and Scorpio.
Like bad or good? I mean, can it be good?
You know,
because
well,
I've had
here's
a really
the thing.
We
are
so
supposed
far.
To like that. Us witches are supposed to like that energy. We're supposed to, because we are supposed to like that side of creation, although unfortunately it's not going to be that way for a lot of people that are in this, because they don't get into it trying to build strength and a conscious awareness towards darkness. They get in it and then they try to turn it to Christianity. And those people are not going to like this phase. They're not going to like it at all. But the people that really understand the power of the night and the power of the dark, I think are really going to enjoy Saturn and Scorpio. But I myself have even been expecting things to get a tad bit heavier. And Jupiter going into Cancer, you know, Jupiter's exalted there. It's his favorite sign is Cancer. Again, also showing fact that, you know, the ancients did see the Cancer as being pretty powerful. But people are going to start feeling that as well, and there's a lot of people getting ready to move because of that alignment. Cancer represents property and home, so a lot of people right now are going to be shifting property, and people can use whatever zodiac they want, but the universe uses this one, and so you're going to see a lot of people shift their property over the span of the next year.
Wow.
Cancer deals with knowing where your home is and knowing where you belong, so people are going to start having very strong feelings about their past, their youth, or places they think they should live, or things places they should be.
I've noticed that both aspects of that.
Cancer rolls over the storehouse of memories, so people are going to have more powerful memories of their past too.
Cool.
Oh boy. Well, maybe not so cool. Yeah, there are things, and I can only speak for myself, but there are things in my past that maybe this is not such a happy thing. Because I believe that there are things blocked, not just in my mind, but in other people's minds, that are, from what Jade is saying, sounds like they're going to suddenly start coming to the fore, and I don't know if I'm ready or if I even have a choice, which I'm sure I don't. So it sounds like it's going to be a pretty heavy time.
Yeah. It's funny because water signs specifically deal with the storehouse of emotions. And, you know, having Jupiter going into Cancer is going to really highlight people's emotional state. And then when Saturn goes into Scorpio, that pulls up the darker side of people's emotions. Cancer is not necessarily the darker side of people's emotions. Scorpio is. And the combination of these transitions happening at the same time or the same year, people are going to have a lot of really powerful experiences. And we, as witches, should be able to utilize this energy for our growth, but a lot of people are not. I think a lot of people are going to start really struggling. Because they can't handle what's going on. I mean, a lot of people they're not aware of the bigger picture. And phases like this are created to help us see the bigger picture.
Well, hopefully, I'm hoping I will be on the good end of that, because it has not been a good year so far. So it's just starting to even out and starting to get to a point where I can actually relax. So yeah, I don't know. I don't feel much from Mercury retrograde aside from tripping over my words, but that's
not yet.
Normal
it's just starting, by the way. It's just now starting. It's supposed to be a pretty intense one this time around.
Great.
It's just starting. I started feeling it not so much through words, but I started breaking things, which in associated with Mercury retrograde is I dropped a cup and it broke. And then on my walk, I went into a store and got a bottle of water and actually knocked something down, and that was me. I'm like, oh, okay, this is Mercury retrograde. There's this energy that's kind of around and about. I don't mind Mercury retrogrades too much. They don't really bother me. There are other alignments that I personally, you know, get less inspired by. Because really all retrograde planet is a planet getting slower. People think, oh, it's when Mercury moves backwards. No planet moves backwards, by the way. The Earth shifts speeds. So it's kind of like looking at a hubcap on the wheel of a car. It's going one way, and then when it hits a certain speed, it looks like it's moving backwards.
Yes.
That's what a retrograde motion is when it appears to the Earth, because the Earth shifts speeds. When it shifts a speed, it looks like Mercury is going backwards, but we just are now officially moving a little bit quicker. And so it is a time retrograde planets are how they are affected by the Earth's movement and shifting of speeds. And oddly enough, there are some speeds the Earth will shift into where then Mars will start to move backwards, and then you'll see Venus start to go backwards. And it's not the planet moving backwards, it's just Earth shifting speeds.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, I didn't either.
I know planets don't go backwards. I mean, that I understood, but I didn't take it a step further. No, it makes sense.
Well, it's funny how I corrected a Western astrologer the other day, and she came in and she was like, oh, God, don't you hate it when Mercury goes backwards? And I'm like, first of all, when someone says they're a Western astrologer, I know they don't know anything. It's immediate.
Oh, boy.
It's a battleground for me to get into. I know I'm going to win because any educated astrologer that really seeks comes up to the same conclusion I have. I'm not the only one that's out there talking about the real zodiac. I am the only one out there talking about the 27 signs. That is true. But there are sidereal astrologers. There's a lot of them out there that use the real zodiac. But when I'm dealing with Western astrologer, I automatically know the person doesn't know very much about astrology, because it's any in-depth research, you come to the conclusion that the zodiac that we know is wrong, and I'm not the only one, like I said, to come up with it. So she's like, oh, don't you hate it when Mercury is moving backwards? And I'm like, well, it's not. Like, what do you mean it's not? It's what Mercury retrograde is. It's moving backwards. And I'm like, do you think the planet Mercury moves backwards? It does. That's what retrograde motion is. No, and this is where I have to correct you. This is why in India you have to learn astronomy before you can be an astrologer, which matters, because our ancient astrologers were astronomers. I'm like, no, the Earth shifts speeds, and it hits certain speeds consistently where it impacts that planet. So right now, Earth is getting ready to shift its speeds, and then Mercury will start to appear to be moving backwards. It's because we're moving a little bit quicker. And then we're going to stop spinning too quickly. We'll go back to normal speed, and then you'll see Mercury then catch up to the place it was before. And the same thing with Mars. Mars doesn't – you would expect all planets to look like they're moving backwards. But planets move at different speeds themselves. So there is a speed Earth will hit, then all of a sudden you see Mars start to move backwards. But oddly enough, Mercury is still moving forward. It's all the positioning of the speeds of these planets in relationship to the Earth shifting speeds as well. But it's funny because, I mean, Western astrologers just don't know. And I still can't get that debate going on. I had a couple minor ones start to break out. You know, I was joking with Gianna. I mean, oh, I've had a couple potential fights break out in the world of astrology, but they end so quick. Because people don't know what the hell they're talking about, but yet they won't accept the change still. They won't accept it. They won't accept it, but they'll argue with me and then be defeated but still not make the change, which shows you what a grip ignorance has on people.
And it extends into so many spheres of
it does, doesn't it?
It does. It's everywhere. This is one topic, but it really does reach into, you know, the whole person's being of being stuck and not wanting to learn. Jade and I were having this conversation, I think this past week, where we were talking about how, you know, if you don't want to learn anymore, just, you know what, you might as well not even be alive. If you think you know everything, you truly don't. Get over yourself. There's a lot to learn. No matter how old you are, no matter what the topic is, it doesn't really matter. The desire to learn has to be there.
Yeah,
and it
does.
They don't want to be open. People just don't want to be open to something that differs from what they've always believed. It's kind of like, you know, it's interesting. I have a work analogy for this. My boss will ask me a question. Well, why do we do it this way? And you know what? The answer usually is because we've always done it this way. And the next question is, does that make it the best way? No. Does that even make it right? No. So we've been limping along like this, just believing that this is the way to do it because we haven't tried anything new.
Yep.
Kind of the same thing. It's like, just because you believed something for so long doesn't mean it's right. Just saying.
And it's one of the most challenging things for people to admit that they've been wrong. And so it is solely this thing about pride. Like this one girl that I'm talking about, Mercury retrograde, where she's sitting there as I was telling her about the planet shifting speeds in relationship to the planet speeds themselves. She's looking at me like she wanted to kill me in my office. Like I want to reach over and stab you. She was so infuriated that she didn't know any of these things. And here I am educating her. And, you know, she just heard I did 27 signs. She didn't know that. I was like, you're not this sign, you're that sign. And so, but it is fascinating to see, as an astrologer, when you are owning something that is an absolute truth. And I say absolute truth because I'm talking about science here. When I talk about experiences and religion and things of that nature, that is so open to the individual. My guru always pounded in me, there are as many paths spiritually as there are faces you see. Everyone is on their own.
Yeah.
Astrology is a tad bit different in this scenario because of the fact that it's a science. You know, it's an ology. Astrology means science of the stars. And the real debate is are we using the astrology that our ancestors have come up with? The answer is no. That's why it's a verifiable fact. You can prove that the Babylonians used my system, or vice versa. I'm using their system. You can prove the Egyptians did, and the big one is now the Greeks. The Greeks were the originators of the systems that we use now that are real, the right ones. And yet you can teach us, but it's the real clutch is people not wanting to admit they're wrong. What I was going to say earlier is that girl that came in here, I know what she's doing right now. She's doing everything she can to validate what she's learned. She's not trying to see if what I said is right. And this is why you will tell people about the zodiac being wrong. You guys can tell people, and they'll go, really? And they'll listen. And then they'll come back to you and say that I'm wrong. Because they've talked to someone else. That means they didn't venture off to learn whether what I was saying was true. They actually went to the people that would verify their ignorance. And so then they go talk to another astrologer. This happens to me a lot where I'm like, the zodiac you know is wrong. Then they go call another Western astrologer. And they go, oh, I went to this guy, he said the zodiac we know is wrong. He's like, oh, no, he's wrong. So, of course we're using the right zodiac, of course. So they come back and they've shifted back their sign. And I've been saying now this for 7 freaking years now. I'm like, you get that person into my room, the person that says I'm wrong. Don't just accept that. Get that person so him and I or her and I can have a debate about this.
Right.
You can see it. And then you make a decision because people keep staying with the same system because they ask other people who don't know either. And I can't get a single frickin' person to come up and have a debate with me, argue with me about it. And it's just one of those things. It's just ignorance just feels more ignorance. And I've accepted happily that Asterian astrology is just for the people that want more, you know, the people that may really want to know about this system of astrology and want to know on a more advanced level. A lot of my work is more for the advanced thinker. It's not for the mundane thinker. And I'm comfortable with Asterian astrology being for what I call, you know, smarter, more spiritually orientated people. because it just is what it is. You know, Rumi, the great poet, said, once you find truth, you might as well move to a desert mountain. I can
yeah.
do that now.
Yeah.
I'm watching this happen. I'm, like, waving, you know, a white flag out there going, hey, listen, guys, I have, this is what I'm saying is verifiable. We are using, I am using the system our ancients use, and to still watch it have little to no impact on ignorance. It has impact on it has impact on people who want more. It does. It doesn't have any impact on people who want to retain their ignorance. No impact.
That's got to be frustrating.
Oh, no, it is. You know, it was more frustrating in 2012 than it is now. Now I've fully embraced what it is, which also it's comfortable for me that I believe now that the system is going to take 20 years to become potentially mainstream. And I do believe it'll be up there still with Western astrology, but it'll be an option for more intelligent thinkers. I'm not referring to educated, just more wise thinkers. It's going to be an option for them. I've accepted that, which has allowed me to pursue music more and to do other things that I have a little bit more fun doing, because I put a lot of pressure on myself in 2012 to put the system out as fast as I could. And now watching it run into ignorance and then watching the response of ignorance, I'm like, okay, 20 years now. This is going to take 20 years.
Aww.
Could happen overnight. Could not, but I don't have a lot invested in people's responses. In 2012, I suffered a lot. I was like, I was suffering on a day-to-day basis, going, I can't believe that people, I can't get anyone to debate with me. Sue Miller dropped out. Robert Hand wouldn't debate with me because he already said, I agree with you. I wanted the foremost Western astrologer, the one that was the smartest, I wanted to have a debate with that one person that seemed to think that they knew. That, to me, was Robert Hand. And then to find out he was already using Hindu astrology, I'm like, all right, got it. So Sue Miller's not going to do this. She has no education about these things. I can't get anyone else to do it. So it's just going to be me, getting clients through my door, which I do in a very nice way. My business is bigger than ever, and people leave my office changing their sign. That's
awesome.
Over time, over 20 years, that is going to end up having an impact, and I'm comfortable with that. That's fine. I'm more relevant as I get older. See, in music, I don't mind putting more energy into my music for the next 10 years because I, as an astrologer, I'm going to be more relevant when I'm 60 because of age, where it's opposite in the music world. Well, not really. The type of music I do is more for electronica music doesn't really have the same age qualms that other music does. But at the same time, it's allowed me to have a little more fun just releasing the tension around that.
Cool.
It is cool.
Mm-hmm. No. And I hate to do this to you. We're down to, 3 minutes. I just wanted to get that out there so I wasn't like, oh, my God, we've got 20 seconds. Because it's always a good time. We need to make the show longer. Poor Raina will be asleep by the end of the show.
No, I mean, the subject matter is amazing. I'm just old and tired and worked all day.
you never stop working. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, I got yelled at for that today.
My sister run her ragged. They really do.
Ragged.
Yeah, we've heard a little bit about it, and I've heard about it.
Yeah,
oh,
I can hear about it here and there. What's going on?
Oh yes.
All right, guys. Well, it was.
I tell my guru everything.
Yeah,
she's my little tiger, as I call it. She can be a 5 foot one and a half tiger. She can be a 5 foot one and a half tiger.
Oh, she will tear you up just like a 7 foot tiger too.
Oh, I know it. I'm aware of it.
We love you, baby.
Love you too. I will be on again here soon, and I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
Absolutely. Oh, and I'm sending you a copy of that book. So. PM me the address that you want it sent
perfect.
To.
I will. I'll text that, or I'll send it via Facebook right when I get off the phone.
Awesome. Sounds good to me.
All right, guys. Well, I'm looking forward to the
All
next
right.
time I'm on the show, and let's make it soon.
All right.
Absolutely.
Safe travels.
Absolutely.
And get back up with us when you get back into town, babe.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
Love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Love you. Bye.
I adore him.
He's so sweet.
He's
I'm glad
smart.
Everything's
He's
going good.
Sweet.
Ah, shit.
Yeah.
We're down to a minute.
All right.
So, yeah, next week we will be off because I'm having anniversary weekend. And happy
yes.
Friday the 13th. Full moon
yes.
Friday the 13th.
Yes.
Get your wands out
yes.
and go do some shit.
Take out that magic fuck stick and wave that bitch.
Hell yes.
Right.
Before the planet starts slowing down, because that does not sound good. All right. Well, great blessings, guys. We love you.
We love
you. And ya. We will talk to you soon, and we enjoy you guys tuning in. And later, taters.
Bye, everybody.